Next up is Ashok Vemuri. He is the head of our Financial Services IBU, which is the largest IBU for Infosys. If you need more efficiency in your back office anywhere, he's the guy to talk to. Ashok.
Thank you, Sudeep. Good morning, everybody. My name is Ashok Vemuri, and I head the banking and capital markets business for Infosys. The format of the presentation that I'm going to make this morning is I'm going to introduce the financial services practice, give a brief overview of the market, and then talk about the client imperatives derived thereof. Talk a little about the financial services strategy that we are evolving as a consequence of these client imperatives, along the lines of industry expertise, risk management, solutions and alliances, and integrated outsourcing. And then talk briefly about the benefits that we think this strategy will bring. The financial services industry is the largest end user of Infosys services. We work in North America through the banking and capital markets group and the insurance and healthcare practice in Europe, in Asia Pacific, and through two specialized units, one global accounts and the other the banking business unit. Financial services is the largest contributor to Infosys revenue, accounts for about 34% of the total revenue, of which 74% comes from North America. The banking business unit develops and markets the Finacle suite of banking products and solutions. As mentioned earlier, it contributes to over a third of company revenues and has been growing at a compound annual growth rate of about 39%. Some key metrics, number of active clients is 127. Number of large clients is defined as those with revenues greater than 30 million is 5. Those greater than 5 is 13, and a practice strength of 8,500. This data is as of 31st of March 2004. In terms of revenue profile breakdown, consulting and package implementation provides about 13%, application development about 55%, testing and reengineering 12%, others about 20%. We service the complete spectrum of the financial services industry. We work with the banking firms, we work with the capital markets companies, we work with diversified financial companies, and we work with insurance companies in the space of life, property and casualty, insurance brokerage, reinsurance, and so on. And we service our clients through a suite of end-to-end business advisory and execution services. The capabilities that we bring to the table are in the area of strategic planning, where we work in global sourcing strategies, portfolio rationalization. We work in the area of business transformation, whether it's org-wide business process reengineering or post-merger integration. We work in the area of operational efficiency, straight-through processing, claims process automation, etc. And we work in the area of risk management and compliance, an area that we're increasingly getting invited to work on. And we've done significant work in trading compliance, Basel II, Sarbanes-Oxley, etc., as well as in customer and revenue management, like unified customer view, data management, pricing strategy, etc. And as IT begins to gain center stage in defining overall corporate strategy, we are getting invited increasingly to the boardroom for our business and process capability consulting, as well as our ability to provide direction setting from a strategic perspective. And we provide these services using, we not only provide these consulting abilities, but also implement and execute them from an IT perspective using our application development practice, our infrastructure maintenance capabilities, BPO, etc., all under the umbrella of very robust program management capability. I want to now talk briefly about the market overview and the client imperatives derived thereof. This is something that you probably are fairly familiar with. The worldwide financial service industry is expected to spend about $129 billion on IT services this year. It's growing at a compound annual growth rate of 6.3%. Some key facts on the financial services, IT services space. Technology is one of the five top key business issues for financial services CEOs. The financial service industry represents the largest spender for IT services worldwide. These institutions have been at the forefront of global sourcing, growth in technology as well as in operations. We are seeing growth in all the segments that we service due to the recovery in some of the U.S. economy and U.S. and world economy and several other drivers like the quest for competitive advantage, M&A-related IT integration, regulatory mandates, etc. We believe that the era of buying only technical expertise is on its way out, and that of buying business IT expertise is emerging. I want to talk a little about certain mega trends that we are noticing, which are driving client strategies and thereof the expectations that they have of service providers and essentially the new game. And some of these financial services mega trends that are defining these new games, and I'll just list them out very quickly, are improving customer management, increasing cross-sell, and reducing churn, essentially client retention, increasing regulatory oversight both from an external perspective as well as implementation of certain compliance measures that have been hitherto ignored, global sourcing for competitive advantage, growing global competition and entry of non-traditional competitors, increased complexity and sophistication of financial products and services, importance of scale leading to mergers and consolidations. We have seen the Bank of America fleet or the JP Morgan Bank one. Increased use of technology to develop products and services in a highly networked world with very sophisticated end users, and cost reduction through operational improvement and productivity gains. These client expectations, in turn, are changing the kind of megatrends are actually changing the expectations that clients have of the service providers. Our clients are looking at service providers to provide global sourcing and delivery capability, not only in the geographies that they operate, but also deep domain knowledge in the verticals and sub-verticals in which they operate. They are looking for uniform and consistent high-value capability across the team that services them, irrespective of the geographies in which they operate. The days of a very sophisticated client-facing group and a weak execution model, or of a pure low-cost execution model strategy, are over. The expectations that clients have of their service provider is of size and scale. There's an expectation that we will bring process capability and financial muscle to the table to manage and mitigate risk. There's an expectation of scale and the ability to scale rapidly in line with business requirements of the clients. And they're looking for service providers who provide depth of experience, shared management vision, and alignment to business goals to partner strategically on large deals, both in terms of tenor and value. Their expectation of providing an integrated operations and technology offering, something that I will talk about a little more in detail later on, as well as ability to provide industry-focused solutions rather than just plain vanilla services. Our strategic response to these client expectations is driven by these client imperatives. Our clients are increasingly reposing trust and confidence in us not only to bring technology capabilities to the table, but also process capability and domain capability to make them competitive in the global marketplace. Our responses are designed to not only meet these expectations, but also to exceed them. On the left, once again, I list out the client expectations, and on the right, I provide a response and focus for 2004 and beyond. They are, one, increased focus on building domain and process skills, two, achieve partner of choice status through process innovation to provide low-risk and high-value solutions and services. Three, develop industry-focused service and business solutions internally or through third-party alliances. And four, provide an integrated end-to-end outsourcing service. I'll talk a little more in detail about this four-pronged strategy. We are investing in our people to build depth and breadth of industry expertise. There's an emphasis on recruiting business consultants and analysts both in the local markets as well as in India. There is an emphasis on training. There's an emphasis on getting certification so that we're able to meet the client expectation. We are quantifying our various key assets from existing projects to leverage innovation and enhance capability for new initiatives. We are taking steps to ensure Infosys remains the highest value and lowest risk provider. We are leveraging our multiple worldwide and Indian locations to mitigate geographical concentration risk, as well as to increase the size of the pool from which we can source skill sets and capabilities. The appointment of Chief Risk Officer for some of our key accounts has been very welcomed by our clients, as it not only provides a well-defined strategic roadmap in order to mitigate risk, but also helps us to identify potential areas of breakdown and remedies thereof. We have a very robust disaster recovery and business continuity plan for all accounts. These are reviewed periodically with our clients and put to stress test in order to ensure that they're effective and current. We believe that the key differentiator for service providers in this marketplace today is not only the ability to understand business and technology problems of our clients, but also provide effective solutions for the same. Our solution set comprises know-how, domain and industry expertise, and strong technology competency. And these have been identified after extensive client as well as industry analyst validation. They are along the lines of operational improvement, risk management and compliance, client relationship management, and technology areas which are specific to the financial services. We are also forging alliances with established and emerging technology vendors focused on this industry to synergize our capabilities to provide effective solutions for our clients. As I said earlier, our clients are increasingly looking at service provider who can provide IT and operations capability under one roof. We are redefining our established outsourcing model to offer a seamless IT operations offering to our clients. And we are doing this at the strategic level, at the boardroom level, where we are helping to capture value and provide direction. We're doing it at the operational level to facilitate change management and organizational changes to facilitate this integration. And we're doing it at the tactical level. We're doing the heavy lifting on both the IT and operations part. We believe that this four-pronged strategy is helping us define the new rules for the new game and helping us define the structure for the next generation company. Given our strong execution capability, acknowledged and recognized as being superior to that of the global majors as well as the other offshore players, and our fastly improving industry competence positions us uniquely to be the service provider of choice for our clients. We also believe that the financial services practice, given its dominant market position, its depth of experience, and its sophisticated solutions that we are providing, will help us define the new rules to make us successful in the new game. I'll take questions. Sure. I mean, it's a two-pronged strategy. Obviously, we are concentrating on growing our strategic accounts because the testimony to that is the percentage of repeat business. At the same time, growth is also driven from the fact in terms of the number of, in the width of experience that we get across multiple companies, across multiple segments. So we are concentrating on some of our existing accounts, which are growing very rapidly. Testimony to that, as I said earlier, is the repeat business, as well as our client acquisition. New client acquisition is also increasing rapidly. So it's a two-pronged strategy. We don't believe in doing one at the expense of the other. Yes, please.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the key areas that we are increasingly seeing is risk management and compliance, and that's an area that we have been increasingly getting invited to. So we've done a significant amount of work in the area of Sarbanes-Oxley, Basel II compliance, Anti-Money Laundry Act, or the Patriot Act, etc. And that's an area we are finding increasing amounts of competency in ourselves and getting invited to the table, as it were. The second area from an operational perspective, we've broken it down into multiple areas. As I said, one aspect is the whole compliance area, which we are finding is to be a very important. The other is the whole thing about operational improvement. And we just actually finished a very highly a webinar, actually, on intelligent exception management, which went down very well. We had an unprecedented attendance. So from an operational efficiency perspective, improvement of operational efficiency, that's another area that we are seeing. We have developed a solution along the intelligent exception management, which is essentially used both on the from the securities company's perspective. We've done a large amount of work on the technology-specific areas, whether it's Unix to Linux migration. We're seeing a lot of attention on the street, especially for solutions of that nature. I talked about risk management and compliance. Application portfolio management, the whole space of actually managing your portfolio, finding synergies, especially in a post-merger environment, that's another area that we're doing a significant amount of work. So, I mean, the challenges that financial services firms are facing, one, of course, is in the regulatory aspect of it, the compliance and risk management. The other is on the operational improvement side, where we're getting increasingly invited. And the interesting thing is they all get rolled into from both from a technology as well as a process capability perspective, and they're looking at us to provide that seamless solution.
Yes, a question. Chris Chaudhry, Midwest Research. A question on your product line, Pinnacle. There may be some occasions where you may be competing with the likes of Siebel, who also are having a vertical solution from banking systems. So how are you managing that kind of conflict? And then I have a follow-on.
Well, I don't necessarily see a conflict here. I think the markets are well-defined. And we essentially do provide solutions and services in the best interest of our clients.
Secondly, on Linux that you just mentioned, there are some companies like Red Hat, which has a customer lock-in kind of a model where they provide services for Red Hat-specific distribution also only. but they're about SIC distribution. Since you have a geographical presence, have you thought about having a incident-based support service for Linux customers and be agnostic to the distribution? Only like if it's China, you go for Red Flag. If your customer is in Europe, you go with Debian. If the customer is in US, you go with Red Flag. So are you trying to think in those terms yet, or it's too early for you guys to put a stake in Linux market?
No, I don't think it's too early for us to put a stake in the Linux market. In fact, we do have a stake there. And as I said earlier, our solutions and services are tailored to meet the expectations that our clients have. And our partnerships and alliances are tailored accordingly as per the client requirements. And it's a function of, as you rightly said, both geography as well as the vertical and sub-vertical we operate in.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the maturity of the financial services vertical. If you look out among large international global customers that are potentially out there, how many of those have teamed up significantly with offshore vendors at this point? And I guess how much virgin territory do you see left among large financial services firms on a global scale?
I think most of the large financial services represented here in this room have an offshoring strategy, and we work with a significantly large number of them without necessarily going into the names. I think the virgin territory is in the maturity of the model in terms of their acceptability of the way the model is actually evolving. Some people are probably at the very early stages in the life cycle in terms of the way they have adopted the outsourcing model, and some are further advanced. I think there is a lot of scope for more client acquisition, but also I think there's a significant amount of scope for actually widening the kind of services that we provide to these financial services companies. So from a coverage perspective, I think everybody has an outsourcing strategy, a fairly robust one, and it's tied in with their overall corporate strategy. And I think from the width of what you can bring to the table, which is what we're talking about from a new game, new rules perspective, there's a lot more area to cover.
I actually have a question for Nandan. Nandan, you talked about differentiation in your presentation, and as you know, your model is converging with that of Accenture and IBM. Excuse me. You have a big head start, but maybe you could help us better understand how you maintain that differentiation as your competitors, you know, migrate to a global delivery model, and maybe help us better understand what are some of the economic implications of their transformation of their businesses and how long that takes to kind of work its way through the industry?
Well, I think this has to be seen in the context of the argument that I've made that, if you look at it in many industries, and, you know, I gave you examples of automobiles, retailing, computers, airlines. When you build a business model from scratch, which has a certain set of attributes, which are based on global, you know, global resources, which are based on information-intensive functioning, which are based on process efficiencies, and, you know, all the things I talked about, you're really creating a new model of doing business in an existing industry. And the challenge is to demonstrate to the marketplace that this is the new model of business and that existing players will have to adapt the way they do it to the new model. And I think we have been able to accomplish that. I think the fact that our model is a better model and the fact that the existing incumbent players have to redesign the way they work to become like us, I think has now been widely accepted. And whenever an incumbent, therefore, has to redesign its internal organization to this new model, it has huge implications and costs. I mean, we talked about the airline industry, right? I mean, the airline industry, you know, the huge challenge they have is they have, you know, unionized labor, they have huge pension costs, they have routes that are unprofitable, they provide services that the customer doesn't want, and so on and so forth. So I think, just like that, in our business, while I think the incumbents will certainly, you know, they are formidable companies, they will have to go through a lot of gut-wrenching activities to become like us. Number one, they will have to completely rebalance the global workforce. I can assure you that's a non-trivial problem to have an organization which is essentially very heavily on-site centric and then redesigning and redistributing the global workforce on an efficient way. It has implications not only, more than the implications of the recruitment of the new set of global employees in different markets, it is the attrition of existing employees which causes internal trauma and dislocation. So I think there's a huge, huge dimension there. The next dimension of this, the globalization and rebalancing of global resources, is that it creates essentially conflict of interest internally.
You know, we have many examples where we have global majors who have set up an outfit in India, and when the Indian employees of the same global major go abroad and meet their corresponding employees, they're not exactly treated with great enthusiasm. So when you have an internal organization where you have a class structure where there's internal conflict, that adds to the turmoil and to the trauma, and we're seeing that happening in many cases. The next thing is that it's about the balance sheet and the cost. You know, I think the fact is that the model of the sales costs and the administrative costs of incumbents is completely out of line with the kind of SG&A structures that we have created. And the sales and marketing costs go to pay a large number of partner-level people, and you know, it's not designed for today's world. And therefore, not only is there going to be a cost on the cost of goods side of the equation, there's also going to be a huge pressure to reduce the cost on the SG&A side of the equation. And that is actually even more traumatic, because if you have to trim down your whole partner structure to become like us, it's going to mean a lot of internal issues as to who's the guy who's going to be laid off. And therefore, I think there's a huge amount of internal focus that will emerge that out of this process. And then finally, you know, it's about the business model. The classical business model is about having groups of people in different parts of the world providing services locally. For example, if I'm a consulting firm which is providing services in both the financial services in New York as well as to the automotive services in Detroit, maybe I'll have 500 guys in New York and maybe 500 guys in Detroit. And these are all silos or clumps of resources. They're not part of a global network. So for any reason, the financial markets are booming and Detroit is in a slump, they don't really have the ability to rebalance the resources globally on this, you know, to take advantage of that. Our model is fundamentally different because we have a global network of resources. It's in a sense a client-server model where we have a large concentration of resources in our low-cost center, which is about 70% of employees, and 30% of employees are really across the world dealing with customers. With that, your ability to rebalance your global load is much better because you can, you know, if Detroit business comes down and New York goes up, the back end just switches. It's just like a client-server kind of thing. So the model structurally, the degrees of freedom it gives us in terms of being able to use our resources more efficiently is fundamentally and structurally superior. And that, again, is how do you replicate that? Because you have to not only, you know, move people around, you have to actually reconstruct your internal operations. You need to have global project management. You need to have a single manager who owns global resources without conflict. Is India going to be a cost center? Is India going to be a profit center? What is the equation between partners who run that? There's a whole set of internal challenges, which is exactly like will happen to a retailer who's trying to compete with a Walmart, or an incumbent airline competing with a JetBlue, or a classical automobile company competing with Toyota. It's the same issues, but it'll be in our industry. So I think there's, again, and I don't want to discount, you know, what they can do, and they're all formidable companies, and certainly many of them will get it right. But I think they have a huge set of challenges, like what I've enumerated. And therefore, our challenge is to leverage the window that we have, where they will be going through this internal transformation, where they'll be internally focused to put in place the kind of differentiation measure that we have to do to take advantage of the opportunity. And there again, my point is that every kind of differentiation that we bring is really taking a classical value activity, whether it's consulting or systems integration, dissecting the value chain of that value activity, disaggregating that into individual pieces, deciding that in our global delivery model, how do we distribute the work of these individual pieces, and reconstructing that back and creating a superior value proposition for customers that creates a competitive threat for our existing players. That's really our strategic challenge. And all the investments that Infosys is making, whether it's Infosys Consulting with Steve and Paul, whether it's the focus on business solutions and verticalization as Ashok talked about, whether it's going towards alliances with companies, whether it's investing in Australia, China, and all our new investments, whether it's investing in our banking product, whether it's investing in our business solution alliance, they're all really investments in differentiating techniques which will leverage our model and enable us to use the window that we're getting on the other side as other people regroup themselves to take advantage of the marketplace. A long answer to a short question.
Right. Well, you know, just to follow that up on, in terms of, it seems like underlying this is the high cost of your competitors giving you this enormous, you know, sustainable advantage. How important is pricing in this element in terms of their inability to lower pricing given their inflated cost structures, your ability to sustain which are extraordinary margins relative, you know, to the industry in Western Europe and the U.S.?
See, I'll take both of them separately. Let's take our margins. Our margins as of today are really a function of the model and the balance sheet and the cost of distribution, and we've talked about that for many years. But clearly, from our perspective, as the level of global competition goes up, as the level of knowledge asymmetry among our customers goes down, as they become more aware of the model and the costs and our profits, etc., it is but natural that they will be, the whole thing will be that to drive the margin down. So that's clearly, we have to accept that that force is going to be there. Therefore, our challenge is to leverage the existing strong position we have to change the mix of what we sell. For example, if you sell more of enterprise solutions, our margins will improve. And by using the kind of new initiatives that we have, ensure that the value perception or the value gained by our customers goes up, and that should translate into the pricing that we need. I mean, when Steve and Paul go and do consulting, they're not going and saying, we'll do consulting in India at X dollars. They're saying, we're going to help you to transform yourself in a particular way. We're going to help you to reduce costs. We're going to help you to improve your efficiency. We're going to help you to improve your customer acquisition. We're going to help you to make your profits better. And that will translate into some kind of a project which is still much higher quality and cheaper than what they get from the incumbents. But from our perspective, there's enough downstream business that we can get at prices that still enable us to make profits. So our challenge is to continue the differentiation and ensure that we are able to both change the composition of services that we sell as well as the way we sell these services with consulting-led and solution-led strategy so that we're able to maintain a profit margin. For the incumbents, it's a far more difficult problem because the very process of knowledge symmetry which is coming in the mind of the customer is creating price contamination for them. It is not that we have to take the business away from them. It's not required. It's enough that the customer realizes that there's somebody out there who can give that value at that price. If we have managed to convince the customer about that reality, that's all I need to do. Because what happens then is the customer goes back to his incumbent suppliers and tells them, look, fine, we'll continue to work with you because, you know, relationships and all that stuff, but I want you to give me the same price as Infosys. And therefore, the contamination effects on their pricing is actually bigger than the market share that we take from them. And that is happening today. It's not waiting for tomorrow. So there's a fundamental structural imbalance that is causing. The other challenge is, how do you calibrate selling of offshore with delivering of offshore? Well, what is the response of incumbent? Incumbent ideally would like us to disappear. Right? They don't want these guys from India and all that stuff. But having arrived and now having got global acceptability and every day on CNN and all that, everybody knows this game. So now the challenge they have is, so they can't ignore this stuff. At some point, they could argue that this is some cheap, pulley stuff and all that. That game is also over because we've been able to show superior quality, value, consulting and all that. So they can't argue that anymore. So the only argument now is to say that, we can do it like them, which is where we are in the stage of the game, right? Now the problem is when they start doing it like us, and if the delivery mechanism is not in place, they'll have the worst of both worlds because they'll have U.S. costs and Indian prices. So how do you calibrate this transformation? It's a very, very difficult challenge that they face. And therefore, a lot of them are facing these kind of issues, which is why I feel that this is a disruptive thing. We are at a very seminal point in the transforming industry, and it's very important for everybody to understand the macro dynamics that are being played out as they evaluate all companies in the spectrum, whether it's us or whether it's the incumbents.
Thank you. It's Andrew Steinman, Bear Stearns. Nadan, I just want a clarification on the subject we're talking about. You spent a lot of time comparing Infosys and the offshore-centered IT services vendors to the incumbent vendors. My question is, at this point in the game, is the majority of the business being won in Infosys really at the expense of the incumbent, or has this new business model enabled outsourcing for the first time out of in-house for a lot of the work that you're winning?
Good point. I think there are three or four different strains of where the business is coming from. One is clearly the replacement market, where companies are trading their existing vendors and bringing us in. The second trend is where they are increasing the level of outsourcing per se, where function that was either performed by internal employees or performed by loose subcontractors is now being consolidated and being given as a bundle to us. So that's internal insourcing going out. And the third trend is that there's a lot of work which customers have to do which the old cost structure could not justify. You know, because you have to make a, say, suppose you have to make a technological hump, a change somewhere. In the old model, the cost of that was so humongous that you didn't even try to do that. Today, because you're able to do that at a lower cost structure, it actually opens up some avenues where the customer can make the investments. But because the investment level is lower, the return on investment on that efficiency or transformational decision is better. So I think we're seeing all the three tracks happening.
Not necessarily. I mean, I think there are three competitive situations. One is where a customer has made a decision to go offshore, and then essentially the competitive set becomes either the Indian firms or any existing incumbent who gives a plausible story on offshoring. The second is where we go head-to-head against the incumbents. The third is there's a whole new set of opportunities that we create which they would never have accessed.
Thank you, Ashok. Thank you, Nandan. Right on schedule, 2 minutes early. We have a break now. Coffee is served back there. For 9:50, I request you to be back by about 10:05, 15-minute break. And I don't want to hold your lunch ransom, lunch hostage to the feedback form, but please fill out the feedback form. And next time you don't, I'll hold the lunch. Restrooms again, up the stairs. Across the registration, men's room on the right, ladies' room on the left. Thank you. And people on the webcast, this is a break. You will hear music for the next 15 minutes. Thank you.